I do this thing, it's like, I love to test things. I just got a brain that loves to learn, test, and prove, right? So I have this thing that I've done for a number of years, and so far it's proven to be pretty accurate. But what I do is when I'm praying for somebody or I'm thinking about somebody, I'll often close my eyes and see their image or their face, you know? And I notice something that my brain, it's like it takes a photo of your face. Mm-hmm. And the thing that the experiment is, whatever photo just pops up all on its own, you know, not a memory, just a seeing the person that I'm praying for or thinking about. Whatever that image is tells me volumes about where that person is. And it really works. I mean, it really, it's the instant picture that comes up. And try it, you might, you know, especially you picture your spouse. And it can tell you people you love, people you spend the most time with. Because your brain's gonna pull the photo that's the most consistent. Mm-hmm. Now if you're triggered with that spouse, your brain's gonna pull up a whole different image. Just saying. Right? All right, back to page 28. All of this talk about the VLE, confabulated stories, the implicit memory and all of that, the main point that I really want, two main points, is for us to remember, be aware of the fact that all of these dynamics that I've described can and will impact your relationship with people and with the Lord. So therefore, that means it's not wise to not process your past history with the Lord and with people. Like, for example, if you grew up like I did, with that plaque I talked about, and your takeaway from that is, my takeaway from that was I wasn't good enough. That impacts how I relate to people if I don't get that healed and dealt with, and how I will relate to the Lord. I'll never feel good enough. And that was exactly my reality for years. All because of what I told myself. Remember, it's not the problem that's your problem. It's what you believe to be true about the problem. After facilitating thousands of encounters, myself and other people, through the years, I'm convinced that if we aren't able to perceive the Lord's presence, it's because there's something in us blocking Him. He always wants to be with you. Always. It doesn't matter what your current state of affairs is. He always wants to be with you. He knows that He's your only hope. So when you find and you say, well, I can't hear Him, see Him, feel Him, smell Him, taste Him, touch Him, He's a million miles away, just stop, take a deep breath, go, okay, Lord, what's blocking me? What's in me? It's blocking me from allowing You to come closer. I facilitated this session with this lady one time, and she gave me permission to share. Her safe place was the streets of New York City. And I said, are you sure? You know, I'm a country girl. I always, the ocean or the country, you know. No, downtown, rush hour, city. I'm like, okay, it's your encounter. So there she is, describing to me what you see. She's describing people everywhere bumping into her, cars honking, noise. I must want to go, Mufasa. So I said, okay, well, look around. Where's the Lord? He's there. He's everywhere. She said, well, I don't see Him. He's not here. I said, oh, You drew near to him, he's drawn near to you. Just take a deep breath, relax, and look around. And all of a sudden, she heard him say, I'm up here! And she looks up, and at the skyscraper at the very top, he's leaning over the rail, the skyscraper going, I said, well, would you like to ask him why he's up there? She said, sure. Why are you up there? And he answered, because you don't want me any closer.
Wow.
Yeah. So we had to find out why she didn't want him any closer. So we did that. And he was able to jump off like Superman. And jump right in front of the crowd and be right there with her after that. So, remember that when you get in a situation where you don't feel like he's anywhere near, that you can't find him, you can't touch him, you can't stop. It's not him, it's here. It's right here. What are you afraid of? What do you believe to be true? And deal with that and then look around. And as I'm facilitating, I don't ask people, I don't say, can you see or hear or feel the Lord? Or is he with you? Those are negative, inferring that he might not be. Mm-hmm. I say, the Lord's with you. He's everywhere all the time. Mm-hmm. Would you like to look around and see where he's at? And you might see him, you might hear him, you might feel him, you might, you know. I'm usually going to ask in the beginning, what's your primary language with the Lord? Is it sight? Is it hearing? Is it touching? Perceiving? Just knowing? Or smelling? If you've ever smelled the fragrance of the Lord, you'll never forget it.
Ooh, yeah.
And I had one lady, one time, she could not connect. I was pulling out every tool I had. And finally, I just said, let's just take a break. Let's relax. Let's just take all the pressure off. Just relax. And just, Lord, how do you want to reveal yourself to so-and-so? And we did that, and we just both just were just in your heart worshiping and how you want. And all of a sudden, I'm keeping my eyes on her, and because we've been working on this for over an hour and getting nowhere. And all of a sudden, tears are running down. She's got her head back, she's laying back, tears running, and her face was full of peace. So I left her alone, just waited. And she had been really crying, I mean, really crying. And all of a sudden, she says to me, oh, I have the sweetest taste in my mouth. Mm. I've never tasted anything like this. Mm. It's just moving my heart. I love him so much. And I'm sitting there going, what? You taste and you're falling more in love? What? And I said, well, what's about this? And he said, taste and see that I am good. I went, oh, rest my case. All right, that's legit. Keep going. So, again, he always wants to be with us. Always, always, always. Let's talk about transference. It happens way more often than, especially if you're a leader and if you're a mother figure or father figure in people's lives. It's very common for people that have been wounded by a mother figure or father figure or mother or father or caretaker that takes that place for that person to have implicit memories of their past traumatic relationship to transfer that onto you. And when they do that, you will believe that everything you're hearing, feeling, perceiving, seeing, experiencing is Rhonda. When really it's Mama way back there, you know? It gets put on, it happens to me. I expect it. It's so common. And the opposite is true. Somebody's had a great mother that loved and attuned and cared. they can transfer that onto other people, even if that person isn't necessarily safe. So both are true. Transference, I did that with Danny big time. Transferred my past experience onto him, and in the sense of, in a lot of ways, but one of the big ones was that my dad was unfaithful to my mom and didn't try to hide it, you know? So I got married expecting that that was true for Danny. And one day, sooner or later, he was going to find somebody better, and he would be unfaithful. And I, because of that, early in our marriage, when he'd get home from work, I grilled him. I mean, who'd you talk to? What'd you say? Who was that? What'd she look like? How old was she? I mean, it was ridiculous. And he just, patient, loving, caring Danny, just answered, never tried to tell me to stop. He never told me once, would you stop doing that? He never did. He just answered my question. And it reassured me and told me, I love you and I'm going to be faithful and da-da-da. But I could hear him, but I didn't really believe him because of this lie back here that told me, oh, sooner or later it's going to happen. And so I transferred onto him what I believed to be true because of my history with my mom and dad's marriage. So that's not good. So here's a great comment. Carrying around your past, and a little boy says, wouldn't it be easy if you just left that behind? Now, yes and no, right? You can't just leave it behind unless you process it. Open that bag and take the stuff out, let the Lord heal and comfort and tell you the truth, and then you leave it behind.
That's right.
Got it? Okie dokie. Any questions, comments so far on this morning? Yes, Deborah. The microphone.
So earlier you were saying like the five things to process pain before it becomes trauma. Like, is there a timeline before that turns into trauma?
Yeah, good question. Yes and no. It really depends on your emotional state already. Depends on what kind of attachment you already have. If you have a secure attachment, you got a longer time for that to be processed. If you've got any of the fear-based, it's going to not take long for your brain to say, not safe, not safe, not safe, get rid of it, get rid of, you know. Also, another factor is, are you in a position where because of your life, you have to continue working, performing, and you can't take the time to process that thing. Your brain knows that, so your brain's going to file it away so you can keep going. So it depends. Excellent question. Anybody else? Okay.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
Microphone. But and yet the beauty of that is that it's never too late for God. So
yes.
We're never stuck in that. He always shows us a way out, and no matter how deep that trauma is, he will show us a way out.
Absolutely. And her question I was directly answering at the moment when the pain happened.
Right.
Now, we all know that we all have some traumatic events stored, we all do, most likely, and probably will until the Lord comes and redeems us completely, and then we walk forever. But I so appreciate Deborah's comment, because it's never too late to allow the Lord to come in and heal and deliver and comfort us, even if it's horrific, right? Even if which brings us to the bottom page 30, the healing process. Encountering the Lord, right before it, I skipped the review of the key points. That's just an overview of what I just taught, so we're not going to go over that for 10 seconds. The healing process, I believe, and my experience has convinced me, that spending time with the Lord, encountering Him, intentionally being with Him, bringing to Him our pain, our past, our present, and our future fears, etc., is not only the number one method to see these past traumas that we've stored to be healed, but the thing that I truly love most about God encounters is that we get to know our Father and Yeshua. We get to personally, intimately know Him. And that's a big deal, because when you read Matthew 24:25, Yeshua is describing the end of the age before His return and the judgment scene. That's pretty scary in Matthew 25 when He says, all these people said, I cast out demons in Your name, I did this, I did this. Yeah. And He says, depart from Me, I never knew you. I never knew you. We have to live our lives in such a way that not only do we know Him, but He knows us. Yeah. And that's not a knowledge-based statement He's making. He knows everything. That's an intimate word, like a husband knows his wife. That's a relationship that the Lord's after. Way more than performance. Way more than a master and a slave. That is not in the... That's more like Satan's definition of follow Him. You be My slave, I'll be your master. And Yahweh says, you be My daughter, you be My son, I'll be your daddy.
Hallelujah.
That is beautiful. So that's my... Yes, there's tons of ways that you can process pain out there that work. But again, they don't bring about that transformation and that relational intimacy, that spending time with the Lord, learning that the Lord is in charge and not me. You learn that in God encounters. You go in there thinking you're going to tell Him what to do, and He'll, depending on why you said that, He'll put you in your place. Mm-hmm. You know, and the longer I've interacted with Him and known Him, the more, don't take this wrong, but the more blunt He is with His responses to me, because I'm not a baby anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're just on that journey, He's going to be so gentle and kind. But there, as you grow and mature, He's going to be like he did with me. You don't know, Rhonda, you don't know what you don't know, so stop acting like you do. Did I feel like I got a spanking? No way. I knew He was looking out for me. And I got convicted with it, my pride. Yikes, that's what hit me. Oh, you're right, look at my pride. And how, because we, us humans, because of the fall, we've inherited a gene from the flesh nature called independent living. And America's way of, is, enforce that even more, you know. All our rights. You know, last time I checked, a dead person has no rights. And every one of us are supposed to be dead. But that flesh nature wanting to have a say or having a right, you don't get to have a say in this? Well, yeah, you do. You do. He'll let you have it if you really want it. But it won't be good. There's a translation that I love, love, love called The Pure Word. It's just the New Testament. It's the only translation that's been translated from the original language pure. It's not a translation of a translation of a, right? Mm-hmm. And I love, one of the things I love about this translation is there's a word for good that is different. God good and man good are two different and words. They translated God good or man good or just plain old good, which ain't good. So when you're reading that translation, it says God good, you know that's the tree of life. That other good might be good according to this world and according to your flesh, but it ain't good. And we don't have any business seeking our own good and the world's good. Because like I said, it brings death. So one of the things about encountering Yahweh is that when Moses encountered Yahweh in the burning bush, and he asked Yahweh, what's your name? Because when I go back and do what you're telling me to do, they're going to kill me. But before they kill me, they're going to ask me what your name is, who sent you? Because, you know, Egypt had hundreds of gods. But they didn't, it wasn't that they didn't believe in God. They just had hundreds of them. And so which God are you? Remember, Moses grew up in Pharaoh's house. So he had this mixture, right? So what is, and Yahweh said, my name is I Am. And when you look at what I Am is, the closest we can understand it is, I am that I am that I am that I am. And it carries the idea of I am actively always present. So that's the name that Yahweh told Moses to tell Egypt and all their gods and the Jews that was sending him. And I got some kind of cold air blowing on me. Everybody cold? Yeah. Can somebody do something about that? It's coming out of the vent right here. Poor Kip's going to be a popsicle any minute.
They're working on the...
Oh, the AC guys?
AC guys
are here. Maybe somebody get a blanket and cover the vent right there.
Yeah.
I'll be hard if I can just get that off of me.
And it's
so I know that's for that, y'all. Yeah. Maybe a little bit. Tam time. All right, I'm going to page 31 is a brief overview of how to facilitate God encounter sessions. I'm going to skip that. You all can read that. But let's go to the middle of the page. What do I do when a traumatic memory surfaces? And that is, so when this implicit memory surfaces that you aren't even consciously aware of, we can partially neutralize the implicit memory and the VLE confabulated story. They come together like this. That memory bleeds through that screen, the memory does, and brings with it your brain's explanation, that confabulated story of why you feel this way, and it comes forward. So to help neutralize that, you can stop, go, I think, I believe, maybe I've got some VLE and a traumatic memory that's leaking here. I'm not sure, but I think probably so. Especially if you can get yourself to realize you just overreacted. And if you overreact, you know you have some implicit memory coming forward. And you may not be able to know that you overreacted, but I can promise you, Christy will know you overreacted.
Yeah.
And anybody that saw it will probably know you overreacted. So if you're not sure, you can ask. Humble yourself and say, did I just overreact to that? You know, it's really, it's difficult for you to realize you have implicit memory in a BLE story because your brain is good at what it does. And it, on purpose, brings that forward because your brain is wired to protect you. So, number two, you can, when you recognize you've overreacted or that your emotions are way big or your response is really big, you can choose to change your behavior and your attitude simply based on the truth that we're to be like Christ. Even if I feel this, that doesn't give me permission to tear you off. Even if I believe you're 100% wrong here, my response is to love my enemies. And you can wire that into your brain. And the more you do it, you'll create a neuron pathway, so that'll become automatic when you're triggered. So that's a first step, kind of, that's not fixing it, that's to keep you from blasting somebody, right? Or it's to get you to stop blasting somebody. But you still have to go back in, ask the Lord to show you that implicit memory. What happened? You may not have any memory of it. It might be a dissociated memory part, a part of you, a child part, that's locked away behind the screen, trying to come out, because that part of you wants to get healed. It wants to get processed. And that might be what's happening. You still have to do that, even though you do these two steps here. Instead of doing what we normally have done, and that is focus on the problem, most of us focus on what somebody just did wrong, or what they said to me or didn't say to me, or the situation wasn't fair, or, right? We tend to focus on the thing that triggered us. Instead, we can ask ourselves two questions. You'll have to memorize these, or you'll have to write them down somewhere. They're in your notebook, page 32. Number one, what am I doing that's hindering me from perceiving your presence right now? This is in relation to the Lord. You're not encountering him. You can do that with a person as well. What am I doing that's hindering me from loving Tammy? And own it and repent. Get that out of the way. Right? Number two, and what choice do I need to make to take the next step forward? These are conscious, intentional, learned relational skills that we all should have learned as children. So, instead of defending or fighting to protect myself, the goal for me is to be able to engage in constructive conversation where I can attune and be open-minded, compassionate, generous, patient, and flexible. That's Christ-like. But that can't happen if I'm triggered. It won't. You can fake it for a minute, and it won't. So the first step is those first two questions. Calm, get the Lord's presence, get yourself in a place of peace, and then ask yourself, you know, then take the time to ask the Lord, show me, basically, in a nutshell, show me, Lord, what's going on inside of me. Something's hurting, something's afraid, something's angry, something feels shame, something feels guilt, something in me, Lord, would you show me? And you wait. Remember, when you're in conflict resolution mode, or you're in a situation where you're triggered, or trying to resolve the trigger, never forget that self-protection and defending yourself is self-protection, is a joy killer. You stop. If you defend yourself, you just stopped any and all reconciliation that could have happened at that moment. Basically, when we protect ourselves, we're saying, I'm right, you're wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody likes to hear that. And the truth is, I might be right, and you might be wrong.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I 100% believe I'm right, and you're wrong. You're going to get nowhere with that attitude. So, first thing we got to do is get rid of that self-defending, prideful, self-centered response style. And become that humble servant. Do you guys ever remember in Scripture a time where Yeshua defended himself?
Nope.
Yeah, I tried my best. I want just one. You know, I'm like, is it one time you did? And I cannot come up with an instance. As much as he was criticized and accused of, and even the 3 years, even before the cross, and even in an intense battle, he didn't do it. And he could have. If anybody had the right to defend himself, it was him. And he would have been right. But he chose to be like a lamb before the slaughter and not open his mouth. We're supposed to be Christ-like, beloved. That means we have no right to defend ourselves. Even though we're right. That's the one that gets me. But I'm right. Or here's the other one that gets me. If I believe that I've done something that was right, but it hurt Christy, I don't want Christy to be hurt. So, and I value our relationship, so I want to defend what I did to let her know that I wasn't trying to hurt her or that it wasn't that she did something wrong, but that I needed to do what I did. That's where I get it. I get caught defending myself for them, for their sake, not for me. Sometimes I've been really asking the Lord, hey, there are times when that's important, especially if somebody has self-rejection, big time, spirit, orphan spirit, you know, these that they live in. I see the value of them being able to understand that my reaction or response or my actions was for them, not against them. So I'm asking the Lord to help me. How do I communicate that so that Christy doesn't walk away from me feeling like an orphan or a victim or I don't love her? You know, it takes hearing the Lord from what I, you know, because it's different times. And I've been really intentionally, help me, Lord. I don't want to defend myself for myself's sake. That I know is always wrong. But there are times that my actions need to be presented in a more accurate light for your sake. That's where we, spiritual maturity and relationship and secure attachment style, all that plays into that. So anyway, make sense? All right, how do we discover those hidden implicit memories that are bleeding through that screen that we don't have conscious awareness of? You don't even know they're back there. How do we uncover them? Because you got to uncover them in order to present them to the Lord, at least to some degree. So, let me give you an example. Sally, I'm picking on you, my dear friend. I let's say I get triggered by Sally, and I immediately have learned to go to the Lord right away. So I'll do, Lord, Sally just totally ignored me. She knows how important friendships are to me, and she walked right by me just so she could go talk to Jane. And she even knows that I'm super sensitive to rejection. After all, how many times have I told her to stop ignoring me? How many times have I told her that I easily feel rejected? And here she is, hurting my feelings again, and choosing somebody else to be her friend. But you know what, Lord, I went to this brain seminar, and I heard this lady who was really glad to be with me. And she told me about some kind of confabulation and VLE that my brain does. And she said for me to stop and ask the Lord before I go lecture Sally on how bad she hurt me. So I guess I'll give it a try to wait. Here it is. Lord, would you show me if there's a memory that's hiding behind my rejection and pain? And I just stop and wait. And you might not do it right then, but you know what? 2 hours later, all of a sudden, something might come to your mind. And you go, oh, I forgot all about that. Wait a minute. Stop, take a look at it. But here's the thing. If that memory's back there, that means it's traumatic. It might not be big, but it was traumatic to you when you were 3 years old. Right? So what you want to always remember when those memories start coming up, they have trauma. That's the ouch. That's a ugh. And you're going to want to disconnect from it, most likely. But the quick as you can, as soon as that memory starts coming, look around that memory and find the Lord, because he's everywhere all of the time. He was there. He told me that personally. See, Rhonda, I was there when you were being abused. You just didn't know to look for me. So look for me now. And I would find him in the memory, and I'd watch and see what he'd do. And he would interact with that little girl part of me and comfort, tell that little girl the truth and show me and comfort me and hold me as a child. And then he would integrate that child part. It's like bringing that child from behind the screen forward through the screen into present day. And now that part of me that was shut and locked away back here is now free to live life with me the way Yahweh intended it to be. That's called integration. Some people I've noticed, especially people that come to us from other places, tend to have all these parts that have interacted with the Lord, but they're just in limbo almost, or they put them in a place. They've created a safe place, put their parts in that safe place, and gotten them out of the trauma, which is good, God good, but left them over here on the sidelines, so to speak. Beloved, you need every part of you that Yahweh gave you when you were created in order to walk this journey with him. So those parts that have been set aside, and some people will tell me, I don't want them. I want them over there separate. I don't like them. So that's where we as a facilitator get to work with the adult part to resolve their issue with themselves, self-hatred, the fear, the whatever it might be, the shame. And we work with that adult part until that adult part will accept themselves, accept the fact that they sin or that someone sinned against them. And as a result of that sin against them, they responded in an ungodly way and they chose sin over Yahweh. All that's got to be cleaned up between the adult and the part. And when all that's cleaned up and both adult and child gets comforted, then often the integration happens all by itself. Nobody has to say a word. It just whoop. Sometimes the Lord will ask, sometimes the facilitator, Christy, would you like to invite your 3-year-old part to come home? And 3-year-old part, would you like to go home? And if both say yes, then okay, let it happen. And we don't tell them how to do it, or you don't have to. Okay, let it happen and see. It's almost like being born again again. It's so powerful.
Yes.
And often when that happens, the adult part will notice things over the next week or so, 3 days, that about themselves that they never had before. I had this one mama that came to me. She had, I forgot how many kids now, 5, 7, something, maybe more. Anyway, she came to me, strong, beautiful, mama, beautiful, Christian. I'd known her for years, and she said, I need help. my kids want me to play with them, and there's something inside of me that will not let me play with them. I try, I can't do it. And I know I should be, and I've tried for years, help. So we did a counter, took a little bit, but not too long. All of a sudden, the Lord brings up a memory when she was a little girl, and she was out in the yard playing, and a neighbor took advantage of her. And she vowed, I'll never play again. That little girl. So the Lord came, healed, delivered, comforted. They integrated, and she was exhausted and hugged me and thanked me in tears, 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 tears. And so she left, I'm going to go to bed. Well, she called me that evening. She said, I couldn't wait till next week to tell you this. She said, on my way home, all of a sudden I got this burst of energy from somewhere, and I just had to go to Toys R Us. I couldn't stop. So I go to Toys R Us, and I got a cart, and I filled it full of toys. And I went home, and I had them all laid out, brought my kids, babysitter, and they left, and I brought my kids into the room where I had these toys. I said, let's play. And they all play. She said, I played for hours, and all of a sudden my husband shows up, and I haven't even started supper, because I'm playing with my kids. And we're just having the best time. So we ordered pizza and played some more. So she said, the next day, I went to Toys R Us again. And that night my husband looked at me and said, you can't go back to Toys R Us. And so that completely, radically changed her from that day forward. Wow.
Yeah.
And it was a delight. Yeah. It was fun. It wasn't something I had to do.
Right.
She didn't have to fast and pray for 3 days to get over it. You know, it was just a simple inner vow and a trauma that never got processed, that would not let her play. Just an example of reality there. So, let's go to, I listed here on page 33 five reasons that sometimes it's difficult for us to recognize and acknowledge traumatic implicit memory in the VLE. I'm going to allow you the privilege of being an adult and read that on your own. So I do want to share this very profound experience that really plays out how powerful these traumatic memories can be in my own life. So when I was 7 years old, I was in second grade, and for whatever reason, that day my mom said she was going to pick us up from school. Normally we walked home from school, and she was going to pick up my three cousins. So she told us all, stay by the bike stand at the schoolyard until I get there. Don't leave. I was a rule follower, and I learned young, you do what your dad says, you do what your mom says, and don't you dare not do it. That was me. So when school was over, it was pouring down rain. Guess who walks out to the bike stand in the pouring down rain? My brother and sisters and cousins stayed under the porch at the school. I did what I was told. And so my mom drives up, gets the kids in the car, and doesn't even notice that I'm not there. That was the story of my life anyway. I was a middle child. I was quiet. I was a possum. I was easily overlooked. They go home and then get out. One of the kids say, where's Rhonda? And my mom goes, uh-oh. She goes back to the school, and there I am. Everybody's left the school. Everybody's gone. No cars. And there I am, huddled in a little ball, in the pouring down rain, mud puddle. I can still see it, feel it. And my mom comes out. I'm just like this. I didn't even see her come up. And she comes and gets me, and she starts fussing at me for not being under the awning and not getting in the car. And I didn't say a word, because you don't defend yourself. You get hurt worse. And so I just didn't say anything. Get in the car. My siblings are there. And they're just laughing at me, just making fun of me. And that wasn't good. Didn't feel good. So anyway, fast forward. So I store that away with all my other big, huge, lots of events. Fast I'm about 32, 33 years old. There were three friends at church that I was very possum-like, so it was extremely unusual for anybody to invite me to anything. But this one lady came and said, us three girls are going to a town about an hour and a half away shopping. You want to come with us? And I thought, sure. So we went. Halfway there, we stopped for lunch. And I got up and went to the bathroom. And when I came out of the bathroom, they were gone from the table. And I go out in the parking lot, and the car's gone. And instantly, that memory of being left alone comes. And I didn't know it. I didn't know that's what was happening. Flying forward, I froze. We didn't have cell phones back then. I froze on that sidewalk, tears filling my eyes. I felt alone, forgotten, not important, not loved, not valued. Nobody cared. Not seen, you know? I felt all of that just overwhelm me, and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't think, now what do I do? They've forgotten me. They've left me. When are they going to even notice that I'm not in the car? Right? And I'm just standing there. And then, I don't even know how long, then the car comes driving back up and pulls right up in front of me. And there are my three friends. And they're roaring, laughing, just like my siblings. And I get in the car, and I'm trying to do everything I can not to cry, because adult women don't cry over some silly thing. Like, they pulled a prank on me. They thought it was funny. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out, why do they think this is funny?
Yeah.
You know, my mind is trying to come up with a story.
Yeah.
The VLE, what? Didn't they know? Don't they see me now? Can't they look at me? And it was the thoughts I was having in the car with my siblings, laughing and making fun of me, covered in mud, dripping wet, you know. All of those were coming forward as if they were true and real that day. I couldn't laugh, I couldn't join them, I couldn't make sense of it, and they didn't have any idea the trauma I was in. Not one of them. I never went on a trip with them again. It wasn't because of them, they didn't do anything wrong. It was because of me. What I believed to be true, I could not resolve the tug of war and to make sense of that. So now everybody on my staff knows, don't ever pull a prank on me like that. No, I'd be fine now. Because I found out what it was and I took it to the Lord, right? But that was a very, very traumatic experience as a 32, 33-year-old. And it shouldn't have been. But because of what was behind the scenes, it was extremely, I was ruined for the day. I don't remember. As a matter of fact, I dissociated because I have no memory of getting out of that car and going in the mall. I have no memory of the rest of that day until I got home. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about this thing called, isn't that so weird? One of our farm babies. Oh, look at her. She's a big girl now, sort of. All right, we're going to talk about this strange dynamic that's very real, and we talked about it some, I think, yesterday. The external locus of control is the full title of this. It's the dynamic of maturity, emotional maturity. When you're an infant, like little Benjamin back there, or little Benjamin, that it is absolutely 100% appropriate, good, and right that he expects everybody or anybody or somebody to take care of him. And And he especially has that because he's been well-loved, well-nurtured by his mom and dad and a whole farming family here. And so he already has that established. He's how old now? Eight months?
Almost 8 months.
8 months almost, yeah. So by 6 months old, he would have established that is true. So that's established in him. A secure attachment has been formed in Benjamin. And he expects somebody to feed him, somebody to keep him warm, keep him cool, somebody to speak kindly with soft tones of voice, somebody to look in his eyes when he's feeding, somebody to assure him that he's safe and loved. All that has been established in him, that he doesn't have to do anything except exist. And if those needs aren't met, he's wired to let people who take care of him know that he's in need. And he's real good at it. So are all of us. It's called crying. Starts out usually as fussing, squirming, and then it builds, and then it builds. And if it doesn't get answered in the amount of time that his little body says it needs to be answered, he's going to really let the world know that he's not happy. And that's appropriate. And that's by design, by Yahweh's design. Now, that's healthy, but like we talked about before, it's not healthy when an adult does that. So, this I'm trying to find the word that would describe what I'm. This mode of living, this way he lives his life, is perfect, right? Because he's doing what Yahweh built in him to do. And it's our responsibility to meet his needs. So let's talk about what he views right now. He views the world as the adults having all control and power. And is that true in his life? Yeah. That's called the external locus of control. For example, as an infant, it's often true that the pain he experienced might be because somebody else didn't do what they were supposed to do. Like if Cassandra can't find a diaper and he's like seriously in need of a diaper change and he has to wait 5 more minutes for her to get that diaper. He's not going to be happy because she hasn't answered his cry because he's got a dirty diaper. And that's true for relational needs. It's true if he's hot and it takes her 15 minutes to get him cooled off because she's responsible for all of that. Temperature is a huge bonding point for infants. I remember my two girls. Our second daughter, she gets hot real easy. You have to learn that, right? I didn't know when she was a baby that she was super like her dad, oven. But I figured it out. She was born in August in South Georgia. Hot, 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 right? I figured out real quick. Oh, she's fussing because she's hot. And I just take some of her layers off and she'd just be happy and kick and coo and just be, I learned it. So that's part of bonding is that you attune and you figure out what they need. So we all know that's true and right. So let's just jump down now to when an infant grows into an older child, it's appropriate and developmentally normal for that 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 12-year-old to ask for help when they aren't able to solve a problem or complete a task. That's normal and healthy and good and right. And it's also healthy for that child to believe that an adult will help them. It's normal for that child to wait and allow that adult to figure out how to help them. and what kind of help they need. And then for that adult to do it, either themselves or with them. The problem comes when I'm an adult and I get triggered. And content from my past comes forward as implicit memory, causing me to believe that other people or the Lord should come and figure out what my problem is and be the solution. When that happens, it will feel intensely true that I've done everything I'm able to do for myself, and the problem is too big for me. So I've asked for help, and now it's somebody else's responsibility, or the Lord's, to give me the help I need and fix my problems. If they don't do so in a timely manner, it will feel intensely true that it's reasonable for me to become increasingly upset with them. And then here we find ourselves as a 33-year-old acting like a 7-year-old. Or something like that picture. Mm-hmm. I can't even believe I found that on the like, really? Yeah. So,
yeah.
The truth is, if I believe that I'm stuck because the Lord or somebody else wasn't helping me the way I believe I needed to be helped, and if I believe that it's your responsibility to fix me or help me or be the solution, and if I believe that you should resolve my problems, that's going to prevent me from being able to receive the help that I really do need. Because I'm going to want you to do it my way or the highway, instead of you coming in and saying, we might need to look at some past woundings here. Right? If I feel dependent and helpless, and if I choose to wait passively for that other person to deal with my problems, then I'm not going to own my responsibility as an adult. I won't ask the Lord to show me what I need to do differently in order to discover what's blocking me. You see what a terrible setup that is? It keeps you from getting the help you really do need. Yeah, that's why I wanted to point this out, because often we get triggered, and often, not often, but there are times we get triggered, and we do respond like a child. But it's even more common that we don't even recognize that we're acting like a child. But what we will do is blame the other people because they didn't help me. They didn't meet my needs. If only they would have done X, Y, Z, then I wouldn't be feeling this way. When you feel that, think that, know that you're triggered. It's a sign. You might be triggered if.
That should make a list.
T-shirt. You might be triggered when. Yeah.
Keep it a list.
Yeah. All right, attunement. I'm going to really quickly talk about attunement because I think probably, well, a good bit of you probably already recognize. So attunement is, I offer attunement to you, but you have to receive it. Right. I can offer it all day long, and if you don't receive it, it won't do you any good. Mm-hmm. But if you will receive my attunement, this part of your brain on the right hemisphere, it's a banana-shaped organ called the nucleus accumbens. I used to call it the Christopher Columbus. I couldn't remember what it was really called. This is where you have the ability to be relational and not a robot. It keeps us from being robotic. You want your relational circuits online, because that's the only way you're going to interact with Yahweh and with people. They go offline, you shut yourself off from them, right? Attunement is the number one way to help somebody get their relational circuits online and keep them online. And we look left eye to left eye when you're intentionally attuning to somebody or wanting to communicate with them. look in their left eye, and hopefully most of the time their brain will respond. Unless they don't want to have anything to do with you or they don't trust you, then they'll automatically look in your right eye. But you keep looking in their left eye, because the left eye is directly connected to the relational circuit in your brain. Now, if you're talking to somebody and you don't want to be close with them, you don't trust them, you have a history with them, or you just don't want to let them see you, look in their right eye when you're talking to them. Makes a difference. I've done it. I look at somebody and I go, oops, I see something there. So I'll switch to their right eye. So attunement is when I offer it, my body language, my tone of voice, my facial expressions, etc., is saying, I see you. I hear you. I correctly understand your internal experience right now. I join you in your emotions. I genuinely care about you, and I'm glad to be with you. Now, if you take one of those out, the last one, you could do all five of the others, and it will not turn on that other person's relational circuits. I'm glad to be with you. Always, always, always has to be present, or it won't work. So make sure you master communicating with your body, with your face, with your tone of voice, with your eyes, that you're glad to be with me. And you can't lie. You can't lie in this regard. Here's why. I have something sitting right here that tells me, that's looking at you 7 times every second. Now, because I'm speaking to a room, I can't do that. But if I'm one-on-one talking to you, 7 times every second, my brain right here is looking to see if you're glad to be with me. Number one, it's looking for that. Then it's looking, do you see me? Do you hear me? Do you care? Do you understand what I'm communicating? Are you joining me in my emotions? But first and foremost, it wants to know, are you glad to be with me? Now, if you're sitting there as a group, like I talked about earlier, and you're sitting back, your arms are crossed, and you're, or you're on your phone, or you're, you know, looking at the floor or the ceiling, or my brain figures out real fast, oh, you don't want to be here, and you don't want to be with me. And that might be because you're hurting, or it might be you're scared, it might be because you've got a situation at home that's very painful, you know. But regardless of the reason, 85-ish% of communication is nonverbal. So smiling is a big deal, because you don't generally smile at somebody you don't want to be with. Not usually. If you do, you might get a response from one. They don't want to be with you, but anyway. All right, so that's attunement. And if you receive it, if you're able to receive somebody's attunement, you're going to feel seen, heard, understood. You're going to feel that I am with you, and that I'm glad to be with you, and that I care about you. So I could truly be attuning to you, and you could truly be telling yourself, no, you don't see me. You're not glad to be with me. You don't care. You could tell yourself, and there could be a VLE story coming from the past, coming up front, telling you all those things. So it's so important as believers that we know how to attune, because it's Christ-like. Yeshua did. I made a card back there so that we still have them. You can memorize it, learn it. What does it look like to be Christ-like in relationship? Attunement. And memorize it, practice it, pay attention when you are, when you're not. It is critical. Your willingness and ability to connect with people. Because they, especially if they're hurting, you're not going to get anywhere unless you're able anywhere in regards to being able to help them, comfort them, unless you're able to communicate with your body language and your tone and your eyes that you're safe and that you're loved. And there can be times you're talking to somebody and you're attuned to them and you can see them turn you off, shut you off, especially the more you do this. And they can be overwhelmed for whatever reason. Now, babies do it, and we push past their healthy boundary most a lot of times. When a baby looks at you, they are downloading what your brain's saying to their brain. And they literally download the primary caretaker's brain. So Benjamin's downloaded Cassandra's brain because she's the primary feeder, the one who feeds him, is the generally. And it has to happen eye to eye, though. So when you're feeding, that baby, there has to be eye contact. Don't watch TV, don't whatever. Look at your baby. And you'll see that baby when you interact with the baby. His joy capacity is being formed as an infant. And he has a certain amount of joy capacity. The more he receives from his mom and dad, the greater his capacity will be and grow. So when you go and talk to Benjamin, I just did it a few minutes ago, he made direct eye contact with me. Our brains connected, I felt it, he felt it, we locked on. And then somebody walked up, his eyes went to this person over here, because he's gonna check with their brain and see what their brain's saying. I'm telling you, this happens. And he's connected for a second, he came right back to my brain.
Wow.
And we connected. And then his mama spoke over here, and his eyes went, I know that voice, I love that voice, wow, that's my mama. And he looked at her for a little bit, and then he came back to me. And then he looked back to mama, and he looked back to me. And then that's the way it's supposed to work. Now here's what we can sometimes do to babies. It's not good, not God good. A baby has a capacity to download what you're giving it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when that baby's capacity is reached, that baby will turn their eyes away from you, even if there's nobody else around. That baby will look away. The brain needs to rest.
Yeah.
Now, if we're trying to get them to coo and laugh and smile, we'll tickle them some more or talk to them or get in their... I've done it. You know, get in their line of vision and the baby's brain needs a break. And that baby knows I need a break from your brain. And we need to honor it, let the baby, and the baby will come back when the baby's got that rest that his brain needs. He'll come back, come on, unless he's sleepy or hungry or tired, but generally, that's how it works. Your brain does the same thing. And the greater your capacity for joy, the longer you can stay connected to somebody's eyes. And not just their eyes, but what their brain, it's called mind sight. The brain talking to the brain, what somebody's brain is saying. The greater your capacity, the longer you can stay connected, eye to eye, left eye to left eye. And some people haven't developed that yet, and that's fine. So what you do is you attune to them without forcing them to look in your eye. I just have a memory of our first grandson, Dan and Misty's oldest son. Their three children were adopted from South Korea. Brighton, he was probably 5 or 6. I had been, every week I had a day I spent with him. Misty got to go do whatever. And I had been speaking to his spirit, eye to eye, talking to his spirit. He was used to it. And so he went to preschool. And the teacher, when Misty picked him up that afternoon, the teacher comes down and says, Misty, I have to understand something. Here's what happened on the playground. This was like the first week of school. Little, I don't remember her name, little Susie was crying, and nothing would comfort her. And Brighton comes running over to me and says, you gotta help her, you gotta help her, she's crying. And so the teacher says, I'm trying to help her. Come, come, come. So Brighton takes the teacher, and he looks at the teacher and he says, Bess her spit. And the teacher said, what? That's her spit. And the teacher, I don't know what that means, Brighton. I'll do it. So he says, well, Susie, look in my eyes. And she looks at him. He starts telling her something like, I bet your spit. Yeah, Yahweh loves you. You're safe. Your mama's coming soon. She's going to pick you up. You don't have to cry. I bet your spit. And the teacher said, in front of my eyes, this girl had been crying for over 15 minutes. Stop. Got a big smile on her face. Took Brighton's hand and went and played on whatever. What is best your spit? Misty called me that night and told me, Mom, you struck again. Bless your spirit. I would look at his eyes and say, right, and I bless your spirit with love, joy, and peace, whatever word it, right? So he learned to do that in school. So just a minute ago when I said, look in your eyes, that memory came flying forward, a good one. And so we can go around besting each other's spin.
That's right.
All right, let's see. We only have a few more pages. I'm going to try to get this done so we can stay ahead. So that's attunement. There's a reality for all of us that when something painful happens, our whole part of our being wants other people to validate the difficulty of our situation and agree with our assessment of what happened. That's human nature. But here's the problem. Sometimes the situation that happens isn't 100% the situation that just happened. It's mixed with the past. So if I'm attuning to Tammy, and she's in a massive amount of pain because Kip here, who loves her dearly, but at that moment Kip stepped on her foot, and Tammy's in massive pain, and she's telling me, can you believe Kip? She stepped on my foot, and I bet she meant to do it. And then I bet I've got a broken foot now, and it's way over the top, right? And I'm attuning, and I'm hearing her, and I'm thinking, foot's looking good to me, you know. But Tammy wants me to validate. And she also, human nature, the flesh nature, wants me to join her in blaming. So I've got a problem. Number one, Isaiah 58 tells us don't blame people. Don't point your finger and blame, right? So I have a big problem. Because I love Tammy. I love Kip. And I love truth. And I want to help Tammy. So I cannot validate the extent of what she's presenting to me. So, and her VLE's all engaged because she's remembering when and da-da-da, the bully at school that used to always stomp her foot when he'd walk by her, whatever, right? Whatever that is. So, and she's going to believe 100,000% that Kip did that on purpose and da-da-da-da-da, right? So, again, attunement. Just because I can understand her, the intensity of her pain, doesn't mean I agree. Mm-hmm. So people get that mixed up. You mean I gotta agree that Kip was stomped on her foot on purpose? No. But I can validate her pain. And I can validate that Tammy needs my validation and understanding and attunement. Because the goal is, ultimately, for me to be able to take her hand and get her to the Father. Yeah. And ask the Father, did Kip really mean to do that? You know, etc. So, there's a dynamic that happens, especially with a child. If you've been punished, like I was, it didn't matter. I learned really young. I remember 5 years old. My dad lined us kids up, 3 kids, and wanted to know who wipe their dirty hands on the towel in the bathroom. My daddy couldn't care less. He was in the Marines. He was doing the sergeant thing with us, and I remember I was 5, my brother was 7, my other sister would have been 8. And he said, you're going to stand there until you confess. Well, I got tired of standing there. And finally I said, I lied. I said, I did it. And so I got the spanking. And then later my brother couldn't stand it. And he went and told my dad that it was actually him. And so then I got another beating for lying. He got a beating for getting his dirty hands on the towel. So I learned real quick, 5 years old, telling the truth, lying, what's the difference, right? What's the difference? It's not going to matter. That's what I told myself. So I grew up believing it's not safe to tell the truth. I believe it's not safe to tell a lie. So I'm going to just judge every situation and decide whether I'm safer if I lie or if I tell the truth. I can remember another time when I was older, probably 13 or so, and this was my mom, and it just reinforced it. My brother and I were always, we lived in the country, we lived out in the woods most of the time, and because home wasn't safe. So this particular day, we were told to do something, we didn't do it. When we finally came back home, my mom confronted us, and I can't remember all the details of the confrontation. I can't remember if I lied or told the truth. I don't remember. But it didn't matter, and I knew it didn't matter, right? So my mom decided, because we were guilty, that her punishment was going to be to duck our heads in a toilet, in the toilet. Oh. And I remember that experience, and as I'm going in thinking, what is the point? What is the point? I mean, that was all. What is the point? Truth, lie, truth, lie. So I became really good at lying. I just anything to keep from having things like that to happen. And I had really long hair. And I remember coming up with that water on my hair, long. It was just not good. So that was definitely not good. That will carry, can and will carry into your adult life unless you deal with that stuff that's back there. So that then you're free to recognize the truth is always better, even if the consequences are punishment. Lie, punish, truth, punish. It didn't matter for me. What's the difference? So, let's talk about just choose kindness here, the truth. Gentle protectors are kind, even when they're correcting. I don't think that's in your note. Even when they're correcting you, it's out of the kindness of their hearts for you and as a gentle protector. Thinking of you, I used to hate confrontation. And as a leader, that's not good. I remember, I remember thinking, I would rather just so not be a leader, Lord, because I don't want to confront people. Confrontation was never safe. There was a nuclear bomb in our house. So I had a dream one night during this whole thing of me being, I was in a leadership position, small role, and I had this dream, and long story short, in the dream, the Lord showed me that when I wasn't willing to lovingly confront somebody, I was making myself more important than that person. And that I would stand before him and be held accountable for loving myself more than I loved my brother or sister. And that it was self-centered. So, I woke up and went, that's sin. Plain and simple. And I began to ask the Lord to help me and show me all the reasons why I didn't want to confront and had to deal with all that past stuff and why and all that, so that I could learn to become a gentle protector and learn how to confront people, first of all, with it not being about me, but about the other person first and foremost. And even if I didn't want to do it or didn't like it, I wanted to care more about them than myself. And learn how to do it with kindness. And I believe, and I said this to the Lord, I don't know how many times, Yeshua, Father, you're the kindest person I've ever met. Therefore, I want to be the kindest person I can be. And sometimes kindness makes a whip and drives predators out of their midst. So, important. Let's look at page 37. I'm just going to point to these so you'll make sure you'll read them. In the middle of the page, these are some questions that you can ask yourself. And if you answer no to these questions, or most of them, that means your relational circuit in your right hemisphere is offline. That means you aren't really interested in being relational at that moment or with that person. You want those answers to be yes if you're going to be your relational circuit. And you can read all of that for yourself. Everything with respect to your relational circuit, your nucleus accumbens, will turn out better and flow more easily once you have your circuits back online. Every relationship you have, just how you feel, whether it's with the Lord or people. And if you have a foundation of a secure attachment and relational connection to joy, I'm glad to be with you. If you have those two things, especially if they're anchored in childhood, you had a secure attachment as a child and joy, then what's going to happen for you as an adult is storms come, people don't treat you right, you're still going to be able to remain relational and glad to be with them. If you don't have that, and you haven't built that in you, then when somebody ignores you or doesn't treat you the way you think they should or doesn't notice you or whatever, then you're going to have a more difficult time remaining relational with that person. You will respond like a possum or a predator. And based on your personality, right? Okay, let's look at.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
On that number one, you said, do I feel connected to? And you said, fill in the name. What if that person is avoiding? That's their attachment style. Don't feel connected because they're avoiding.
Then you could change your relational circuit. She asked if you don't feel connected to someone and your relational style is avoidant.
Well, not mine, theirs.
Oh, theirs. It won't, that, this doesn't, if yours is secure, it doesn't matter what theirs is. You're going to still feel connected to understanding that they're avoidant personality style. So now if you don't have that secure attachment in you, that person's avoidant style could cause you to flip out of secure attachment and go to either disorganized or avoidant or, right? It's a great question. But these are about your relational circuits. And you can do this with, you can put different people's names in that blank. Your spouse, your best friend, your person that triggers you the most. And you'll find out by answering these questions if your relational circuits go offline with Bob, then you know you have a problem. Because this is you, not them. You can't blame Bob. You don't like Bob. Well, why not? What's going on inside of you? Right? So it's a really good way for you to recognize how you're interacting with people and what you're doing. Because you'll turn those relational circuits off if you won't feel safe with somebody. Great question. Thanks, Kip. All right, if we have a strong foundation of joy and somebody's accusing or rejecting or mistreating me, it's not going to bump you very much. If you have a strong, secure attachment and joy foundation, which is what we all need. And here we see Jumian and Sarah with a really strong, secure attachment with each other, and here's some of our farm family years ago with a fun field day we had. all their secure joy attachments and etc. It's important that you have people in your life. Here's some more pictures of wonderful people that attune to each other. If you have people like this in your life and who know how to attune to you and are glad to be with you, then it's going to be easier for you to share your thoughts and emotions that are painful and even to experience the Lord. He made us to be in community. It's called the church. And so on the page of 38, if you, I would encourage you to read those tools that help you if you realize your relational circuits have gone off. And your circuits can go off and come right back on. Like if you're at a table and one person at that table triggers you, or you don't like the color of their shirt, or you think their earrings are too big, or whatever. I mean, sometimes it's that little. And your circuits can go offline towards that person.
Yep.
But the minute you look over here and you just absolutely adore what this lady's wearing and how she looks at you and acts, then they'll come right back on for this person. And then if you look back over here, not you, Kim, you look back over here, they go off and they go on. What your brain will do real fast is stop looking over here, real fast, and go whoop. Especially if you're not feeling secure at the moment, especially. If you're feeling secure and you have that maturity, you may even intentionally do this and start attuning to that person on purpose to make that connection. Because that person's brain knows you're avoiding them. Yeah. He got Diego. All right, so read those tools that help you get your circuits back on. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not. I'm a wonderful person. Thank you.
So I guess, how would you delineate, because I was reading through those questions, and I'm like, oh yeah, totally, 100%. And then I'm like, okay, the last two was no. So, and that, I was like, okay, is this a bond response that I'm having, or is this like a true connection? You know what I mean? How would you kind of parse it out? Because sometimes you're feeling like, oh yeah, like I'm super attuned or whatever, and then it's like, oh, I'm just hypervigilant and like focusing in on like how to like make you happy or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how would you?
Excellent question. Attunement is all about your motive. If you're attuning because you want to earn brownie points, or you want to look good to somebody, or you want to avoid conflict, like I did my whole life, then your motive's off. And it's not going to be true attunement, and that other person's brain will know it. May not consciously know it, but will know it. And that other person will, depending on their attachment style as to how they'll react and respond to you. So if your motive is, I really care about you, I see you, I hear you, oh, I feel your pain, your motive's good. Now, again, on attunement, you can answer no to a couple of those, but if you answer no to the one that says, I'm glad to be with you, you're not attuned. And that's where you ask yourself, why am I not glad to be with this person? It could be that in the back of your mind, they remind you of somebody that really betrayed you or hurt you. It could be something that simple. So that has to be in place. That's the first question I ask myself. If I find myself distancing myself from somebody, am I glad to be with them? If not, Lord, help me real quick. Show me why. And he's quick, you know, your brain's quick and the Lord's quick. So, excellent. You don't have to say yes to all of these to be attuning to somebody. You have to know your motive. And you have to make sure you can say, yes, I'm really glad to be with you. And sometimes you start out really glad to be with somebody, and after an hour of them complaining, or maybe 15 minutes, pin on your chest, you're not going to be with them, right? And at that point, if that person is so absorbed in what they're talking about, they may not even notice that you've disconnected. People that struggle with narcissism rarely notice you. They rarely notice that you're not listening, that you don't care, that you're not that rude, because they're self-focused, self-centered. It's extremely difficult to connect on a relational level with someone who's practicing narcissism. All right? But that doesn't excuse us from loving them anyway, right? Okay, let's see if there's anything else I want to cover, because it is 12:30. I want to real quick, page 41, is judging others is a big deal. I've referred to it several times. When I judge someone, I'm actually making negative assumptions about another person's motives. Ouch, ouch, ouch. You don't know somebody else's motives. You can't know them. That's for Yahweh and the person to know. So we have no right to judge anybody. So let me read these two scriptures. Luke 6:37. Yeshua said, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven." I need to be forgiven. I don't want to be judged. Because I know if I'm judged, there's going to be some things seen. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that's an important passage for all of us. 1 Peter 5:5-7. You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders, and all of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. I think it's interesting that Peter ties arrogance, pride, with anxiety. He brings them together in 5 and 7. So I think pride by its very nature makes us anxious, whether we realize it or not. All right, simple way to check your relational circuits, appreciation. If you want to know in a quick way whether or not your relational circuit in your brain is online, then ask if you can feel appreciation for, like if Kip stepped on Tammy's foot, Tammy can stop and go, "Do I feel appreciation for Kip right now?" She's such a lover, she might say, yeah, she might. She might not, you know, I just said, she might say, absolutely, she didn't do that on purpose, she loves me. I appreciate her, she's such a great friend. But then if she doesn't, and her circuits go offline, that's when she's in danger of saying, "No, I don't appreciate her. She just stepped on my foot, and I bet she did it on purpose." Right? Mm-hmm. So that's a great way to find out. Here's the thing. If your nucleus accumbens is shut down, you are not going to consider what that other person feels. You're not going to consider how you're going to treat them, what you're going to do. All you're going to do is tell yourself a story about you. And you're going to tell yourself a negative story about them. And you will respond more like a robot than a human that cares for a brother or sister. That's why it's a big deal to know. Because some people, you've lived your whole life with your relational circuits offline. And you've learned how to live. You've learned how to hide it and wear a mask. And interact. But at the whole time you're interacting with people, you've got to work together. Fort Knox all around you, and you determine how close you're going to let somebody get, and you'll use something like anger, a harsh tone, or whatever to make people afraid to get close to you. So it's don't assume your relational circuits are online. Find out. Start paying attention as well. When you can feel appreciation when thinking about positive memories or people, then you can pretty much be assured that your relational circuits are online. Isn't that sweet? So pay attention to what you're paying attention to. And I put a list here of things that can cause your relational circuits to shut down. You can read that list. When your circuits are offline, you're going to feel weak, small, insecure, alone, vulnerable, unable to care for yourself, and ultimately you'll feel unsafe. And therefore, you will fight to protect yourself instead of engaging in constructive communication. You'll know when you're back online, when you're able to connect with the Lord, with people, etc. And I just love this picture. So the shepherd doesn't leave the broken, he heals them. And that is our goal in life and every day, that we can always, always, always connect with the Lord. And that what we believe about him is true. Because if you believe that Yeshua is some angry dictator that's going to punish you, you're not going to snuggle up with him. It's true. All right? Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for this morning and all that you said and did. And pray that you bless our brains to receive and remember and be able to apply what we've learned. We need you, Holy Spirit. We can't do this without you. We don't even want to try. We love you, Lord. We ask that you be with us this afternoon, the rest of the day, be with us tonight. And we thank you and bless you. In Yeshua's name, we pray. Amen. Amen. It's 12:30-ish. Let's be done at lunch. 1:30.
So today is potato planting afternoon, and we're all excited. Woo-hoo! Great. Yeah! Dee's going to give you some instruction on that. There are a few of you that you getting out there is going to be really difficult. There will be some things up here. Julie Bailey in the green dress, I don't know where she is at the moment. Julie is going to be up here, so a few of you have talked to me, but if it's really difficult for you to be out, or some of you have said, I just want to be out for a little bit and get my hands and my feet in the dirt, but I can't be out there that whole time. There will be things up here that we can be doing, and Julie will be here for that.
So are you guys ready to come to the garden of your heart?
Amen!
Come on! Woo-hoo! I'm so excited. It's a beautiful day out there today, too. The Lord has so blessed us. And so if you're able and willing and you want to come out to the garden, we are going to be planting potatoes, and we're going to be meeting at the greenhouse. As you came in, you saw a large greenhouse going west. And so we were all going to be meeting after lunch. If you want to go home, change, get some older clothes on, meet us at the greenhouse directly after lunch. And if you can, be there as soon as you can, because we're going to get started pretty promptly. We're going to divide into groups. Community service is all going to go to the Alpha Garden to meet Celeste and Colleen to lead planting onions, and then we'll connect after that.
That's our farm people community service.
Yeah.
And then Cindy.
And then Cindy.
So I just have a thing we learned this morning. I don't know about onions, but Dave Butterfield sent around and noticed that our brains can work lots of hours on one potato. So planting potatoes is for our purpose. It's for our brains.
Amen. Amen. It's so true. I mean, this is why we call it the garden of your heart, you guys, because it's so much more than just planting. If you want to see that, it is so good to go and get into the soil and find the Lord in everything that we do, because he loves to meet us out there. So we would love to come and share that with you and be together in unity as a community going for a task that is for the Lord. So just so excited to have you guys out there. It's really a beautiful place. I think that's it. So again, if you do not care to garden or can't at this time, just stay up here and Julie, which she's a beautiful green dress.
Yeah, I know Julie.
Yeah.
She's one that smiles and laughs all the time.
That's her.
All right. Enjoy your lunch and go with your groups again today where you've been meeting. Thanks.
Well, I just want to know when the first potato is going to be planted. I don't want to be there. I want to be there for the first plant.
Yeah.